Welcome to the Premium Way podcast, a space where premium is not reduced to aesthetics or price tags, but understood as identity, as a way of life. In here, we operate at the intersection of psychology, perception, strategy, leadership, and the invisible signals that decide who gets chosen, trusted, and remembered. Our philosophy? Ditch the stereotypes. Ditch the idea that premium has only one face. Premium was never meant to be sterile. It was meant to be rich in character, reflective of your true core and your dream buyer's deepest desires. Like the finest wine, layered, complex, unique, unmistakable to those who know what they are tasting. Refined without losing its edge, unafraid to be different, and impossible to confuse with anything else. This is the room where the ordinary stops applying. This is where standards are set, not followed, and where premium stops being something that you chase and becomes something you embody. This is your permission slip to succeed your way. I'm your host, Yasmin, and this is The Premium Way.
Welcome back to another episode of The Premium Way podcast with an amazing guest in front of me that I'm looking at right now. Fresh and hot from the Netherlands, Sifra is here today, and we're going to talk about the ins and outs of world building when it comes to your brand, owning your unrelatability edge, and many more juicy nuggets that we're going to come up with throughout this conversation, which is, as always, unscripted. So I would just hand the mic to you now, my love, and have you give a little intro beyond labels, but what makes you you? What is really unrelatable about you as well? Let's start with that, maybe.
Yeah, good question. So thank you for having me, first of all. Okay. That was an email. I turned it off. So, you know, I started my Instagram page. It was in 2023. I saw it yesterday. And I was like, oh, that's not that long ago, right? But I started it after my old one got hacked. So I was so happy. I thought I was making it, I was killing it, I was growing fast, and then poof, got hacked and I lost everything. So all my clients were gone. And I cried a lot, of course, but I was like, you know what, if I can do it once, I can do it twice. And at that time I was working at my 9-to-5 job, and yeah, it's not for me. I think you know that as well. We are not here to make someone else rich and to work in a system, you know. So I was like, yeah, fuck that. I'm going all in. So I did quit my job. I had like 2,000 euros saved, but I was like, oh, I'm giving my all. So I went for it. And in 3 months, I think I hit my first 10K month, my 30K followers. Yeah, and I really thought I'm making it right now, you know, the followers, the views, millions of views, the money. But that's the thing, from the inside, I was like, something is missing. I don't know if you have that feeling. Like, I think many women in the industry came to the point where they're like, okay, what I build is successful on paper. But from the inside, it's just empty. And I think that makes us different. So you have women, that is always what I say, who build a business, and that is fine. You hit the numbers, you hit the views, and then it stops. So, but some women want something more than that, and that is, to be honest, not a fun process. It's a really hard one, because how, if you feel like you have this $1 million mission and you want to make an impact, hitting the numbers is not enough. So last year, I made the pivot to business to movement. And now after a year, because also that takes a lot of emotional crying, identity crises, a lot of shit, you know, the shadows. And now I'm here really focusing on movements and sharing and focusing on messaging and movement. And finally, I have what I always dreamed of to do. Everything falls together here. So, yeah. And now, of course, I help other women to build the same.
To
build
that.
A world. Yeah.
Yeah. So before you pivoted to the more world-building specificity, what exactly was it that you were doing?
I was the social media coach. So I was teaching people how to go viral, of course, like the other social media coach, how to go viral on Instagram. But not in a way like these other viral hooks, because I am specialized also in photography of film and storytelling. So I found out that if you use a visual hook on storytelling, your reels go viral. So that was what I'm teaching other people. Yeah, and it worked. But every time I launched, I was like, yeah, this isn't it. And if I don't feel it, I just can't do it. You know, it's just not in line. And for me, that's a story. For me, I pivoted the moment I was lying in bed. And this is a little bit of a sad story, but I saw a girl, an Instagram coach, and she died in a car accident. And I was looking at her Instagram page and she wasn't there anymore. So she had the numbers, the followers, but she wasn't there. So her page stopped. And then I was like, yeah, but if something happens to me, there is a page with millions of views and followers, but it isn't bigger than me. It doesn't continue if I'm not here anymore. And that was for me the moment where I was like, I'm not doing that. So for me, it was really about impact over the numbers. And yeah, then the rest will follow.
Yeah, I love that. And I have full body goosebumps listening to that. Because ultimately, that also is such a marker of playing at the premium league or level, where it's like it has to become bigger than you. And premium buyers in general, they don't just want the success at all costs. Like if it's not aligned with their heart, with their soul, with their ways, their preferences and values, they would rather not have the numbers. They would rather not do it. And it's just a matter of standards. And I mean, standards is also a big topic in your world as well. But everything you said basically really cemented the podcast episode title that I came up with, which is building a world, not just a feed, right? Your transformation from, and I didn't know about that before we started talking today, your transformation from being the social media coach and girl going viral, hitting the numbers to, hey, when I leave this earth, I'm just going to leave a feed, but I want to leave a world. I want to leave a legacy. So what would you say in your words is the main difference for everyone listening between building a feed versus building a world? Because I'm sure it also go like aesthetics play a big role, but also it goes way deeper than that, obviously. So take us in a little bit, please.
Yeah. So this is a really good question. So I don't see an Instagram feed anymore. So how I see it is your Instagram feed is the first impression of your movement. So it's like if you step into the Chanel store, you see on the outside what's the value inside. And that is what the feed is for. So it's really true. I see people on the internet and I can see in 3 seconds, yes or no, based on their feed. So the feed is also messaging. That is why I love messaging. It's not just words. The whole feed is messaging. So how you show up in the feed, it says something about your work. Well, it has to match. But 9 out of 10, there is no match because I know women are freaking delicious. Their work is incredible. But the front door looks like shit, right? Like more personal diary. So imagine if Chanel does that. You wouldn't walk inside. That is, I mean, you don't walk inside Chanel asking for discounts. No, why? Because they set the standard before that. So that is always why I say, why do people come to your DM asking for a discount? It's not a their problem, it's a you problem, because then somewhere you are leaking the standard. So that's on you. That's not on your clients. So your feed is the first taste. That is always how I see it. It's the front door of your movement. And for me, the difference is a feed is something that an audience watched, but they don't really give a shit. And a world is what women enter. It's a different layer. They are more emotional attached to a world. So what I want really, you know that feeling, right? You step into, you imagine you walk on the street and you see the Chanel store and you feel like shit, it's raining and you're not having a good day. But the moment you walk inside, they offer you champagne and we all know then you're in. I mean, I knew the first time when I walked into champagne in Chanel, they offered me champagne and I was like, fuck this, I'm going to buy everything. This made my day. And that is building a world. You step somewhere in, you shift belief, you shift identity and your feeling, and then you are in before they even say the price. And that is what the world does. It sells for you. It's set already standard before you say your prices. And that's different from a feed and a world.
I love your breakdown of this. Something that I don't have on my question notes, but I still want to ask, because it's the I totally hear you with the Chanel and you're welcome to the champagne and all that. I had that, I think the first time I had that was in Dior, actually, not in Chanel
Oh,
probably.
yeah.
But I remember when I then went for the, I don't know how many times to Chanel. I think it was 3 years ago or something. And I felt like the brand experience was breaking for me in that moment. So what I would love to talk about is because the sales associate, she didn't ask me if I want to drink something for the first time ever. And the store was full. It was shortly before Christmas. But you could feel the stress in the air. And that obviously is not up to Chanel's standards. And so then she left me waiting for like 10, 15 minutes before she came back. The store was hot. I was thirsty. I was just standing there. There was nowhere to sit. It was hectic. And I was just like, this is not what I'm gonna pay like four figures for now. Like, what the hell is going on? And so my experience was kind of ruined. And we could now say, oh, luxury problems. But yeah, indeed, it's a luxury problem. And it's a costly one if you lose a customer that would otherwise happily pay you like four, five, even six figures, whatever. And so, talking about standards and taking this into consideration, you said like it's the first taste of the movement when we come onto someone's feet, right? And then also through the entry door, we have the first experiences inside of that person's world. And that also energetically cements a certain standard. So I don't want to ask, like, I don't even know what the question is. It's not even how do you ensure that the standard is never broken, but I don't know, when life happens or whatever, and like maybe critical situations happen, how do you yourself or help your clients to make sure that standard is maintained and not broken? Because it all sounds so glamorous, right? We're like, oh, we're inviting people into our world and we set high standards, and all that sounds beautiful until we have to actually uphold that sometimes,
It's
no matter
hard.
what. So, what's your take on that?
So really good question. So yes, we always hold the standard, and I think really important part is many brands are pretty on the outside, but they suck on the inside. So if you set the standards, you need to hold them also in the back. So that is for me, if you build a world, that is why I'm obsessed with this. It's in the smallest detail. Like for example, the envelopes. I mean, you can't see them, but I'm going to show there are two envelopes. I am looking, okay, which one looks more like my standard? Well, I like this one. But I also, which one did you like the most?
I don't know. I feel like the black one is more you, but.
This is more it's more forbidden. This is more classy. So so I have this white envelope and a brown one, but this is the standard. So it's in the smallest detail. So that is important if you are in your front door sounding exclusive and in the back door you're just it isn't right. There is you can't. And a lot of coaches I know they are doing this, like they look perfect, the perfect life on the front door, and then in the back door with the clients, I mean, they don't answer questions. And I think it's crazy in the industry, like the smallest things that are normal for me and also for you, that people thank me for my clients. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why are you thanking me for this? Because this
Yeah.
is normal.
It's like they pay you five or six figures and then like thank you for caring so much. And I'm like,
Yeah. Duh.
bro.
Yeah, exactly. That's the first thing. You have to hold the standard not only on the front but also in the back. And how you do it, yes, I have days. I mean, especially when you are in a pivot identity crisis. To be honest, last year it was my hardest year ever in my life. I lost all my friends, the love of my life. My mom got sick, my grandmother died, and the beauty of this is I'm back with the love of my life again, by the way. So we are back together. And that's also it. So what many people don't know about me is that I have an anxiety disorder since I was 17 years old. And oh, you too? Yeah,
Was a
it's
hard way out of that. A hard, but
yeah.
it was literally since 17, and I got diagnosed with like a burnout at the end of 17. Because it was so much, like, it was eating me alive from the inside.
Yeah.
Like my stomach was constantly anxious,
Yeah.
couldn't eat, couldn't drink, I would vomit all the time. It was insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how is that now? Are you better on that now with
Oh
the
yeah. Oh
anxiety?
yeah. But
Yeah.
it went on for a good, like, I would say almost 10 years.
Yeah. Safe.
But life is good on the other side.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think many leaders, there's also a question, and it's not in the questions, but many people ask, well, how do I know if I'm born to build a movement? You know, these are the things. I mean, you've been through shit, you know, you've met your biggest fears, the anxiety, the sleepless nights, the nights that you can't even explain to ordinary normal people because they are like, you are crazy, you know, but we know. And if you know, you are born for a movement. And so even if I still have that anxiety disorder, I'm working on it. But the beauty of this is I created the iconic identity and I tap into her. So you know about archetypes, right? I tap into my iconic energy, my queen energy before I work. Before this call, I started tapping into her and I'm saying, I'm the fucking queen. I can hold this shit. So I'm tapping into her. And what happens for your nervous system, it switched. Like Hannah Montana, you know, when she steps on stage, she becomes the famous one, the outspoken one. And then in private, she's just a normal girl. And we all have this identity inside of us. So this identity protects me and it can hold my clients, my standards. And after that, I turn off my fame identity, my iconic identity, and then I can cry in bed. You know, I'm still human, but online, I tune it on to because I can become a bigger version of me. And you need that if you want to build a movement. So that is how I can hold the standard by awakening. I mean, if you look at Hannah, she is awakening now her the archetype that was already inside of her, and she's using it now, and now she is killing it.
Facts. For everyone listening, it's not Hannah Montana, but
Oh, yeah, a good note.
a mutual friend, colleague, and client of Sifra and me.
Yeah.
So the one that's brought us together also. So shout out to Hannah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I love that, and I love that you mentioned the archetype thing, or like we can even call it alter ego, right?
Yeah.
So that is also something that I'm like always working with, always playing with, and have always, like ever since I can think, I love to dress up as a child and play roles
Yeah.
and get into costumes or whatever. And I also think some certain like acting skills and a lot of
Yeah.
like
Oh, I
rhetorical
love that.
skills, they really help you in terms of like presenting yourself in a certain way and holding things in a certain way. And so for your archetype, for your iconic identity,
Yeah.
your alter ego, how did your process look like in choosing which trait of yours to put forward or add to it? Because I always think about it like your brand or your alter ego is like a caricature of yourself, right? We enhance and highlight the best and most profitable features. And so how did you decide, and what advice can you give to the listener around which traits to put forward versus which to like rather keep to yourself?
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's a hard one because we carry all the archetypes. It's not that you're one of them, but one of them is the most dominant. So first I chose the full rebel. That was the first one. But this is also what I see with my clients. They choose some are really the rebel. But some think they are the rebel because they have a lot of anger inside of them. They want to the motivation of wait, I'll show you. That's not the right motivation because you are not here to prove, you know. So I was that girl that was like, I'm gonna prove everyone they are wrong about me. So I went full in on the rebel and I was like, nah, this is not it. I wanted to be the queen. So the queen is, you know, she is cold, she is warm, she holds a standard. So I shift to her now. And I can be both. I mean, I'm still the rebel, my messaging. I like to say fuck, for example, the tone of voice. But still what I want is if someone enters my world, there has to be a clear archetype, and that is what I claim. So the queen is in the front door is my archetype that I choose on the in the front door. But of course, there is my secret sauce. There is also the rebel. So the front door is the queen. If you get to know me a little bit more, you see more the rebel side.
I love that. I love that. And I think it's episode 7 of this podcast. I actually brought this entire conversation into a single episode as well, because for me, I call it like you have your primary archetype, which you said is the more predominant one. And then you have a secondary one, which is your bridge archetype, which basically closes the gap between you and your audience. Because, for example, I've been going with the ruler a lot, but then also to each archetype, you also have a shadow, right? So that can be intimidation, for example. Now, when I work with more spiritual entrepreneurs, they might be a bit more intimidated and might need a little bit more of the softness. So I bring the lover into play as the bridge between the two.
Yeah.
And the lover like infuses the ruler with the lover taste and like, I don't want to say softens it, but gives it a little like more jasmine taste or whatever.
Yeah.
So I love that. And one of your main themes and main mottos also is like, don't be for everyone on purpose and own that unrelatability edge about yourself and so on and so forth. So like your unrelatability, you said basically is your positioning or contributes to your positioning. So can you give us a little riff around that? What comes to mind when we talk about unrelatability and owning your edge and not being apologetic around it? And if you're scared of the wrong people, then that's great actually.
Yeah, they don't belong in your world. And that's the thing, you know, premium brands, they are not there for everyone. Why? Because if someone knows she is special, she wants the thing that is not for everyone. So what I see with my clients is, no, but I want to help everyone. Yeah, we do, because we have a good heart. I know that. And it's really hard because we want to help everyone. But we can't. We need to protect our own energy and we need to hold some certain standards, because if the world is open, I mean, how many times imagine you walk into the supermarket and someone says you can choose all the things, you will not be happy with what you choose. But if someone says, you know, you can walk in but you can choose chocolate, do you know how much you want that chocolate, right? Because if not everything, it's just how human work. If you can't enter something, if you can be just, if not everyone can be a part of it, the right women wants to be a part of it even more. It's just how we work. And this is not like I'm going to pretend like I'm building something exclusive and everyone can come in, because that's fake. That's not what we want. But you hold a standard, and this is really important. Why? Because what I see there is a big mismatch between what clients are asking with the price, and they deserve that price. But if you're speaking to someone, is you're not making money. You feel stuck. You feel burned out. Do you think that they will move? No. I mean, how can someone invest also energetically if they burned out and stuck into a 25K mastermind? They don't. So,
Preach.
yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So that's right. So that is why I see you said in the beginning about it is a premium problem. Yes, it is. We don't speak to regular problems. We speak to premium problems. Like if you say this to a normal person, they would say, oh, what are you complaining about? But that's exactly it. My clients are making six, seven figures. That's
Yes.
not a problem. They want more. They want to move premium clients faster. That's the premium problem. So that is about being relatable. If you speak to everyone, you attract nobody, especially in some certain prices. And that's why it's holding that standard and building that world when not everyone allows because they can't afford you. It's that easy. So if you speak to everyone, you know the ones who invest big want to feel special.
That's
And
so
they
good.
don't feel, yeah, and they don't feel it if it's open for everyone.
I love the way you phrase this. I'm thinking right now, can we go a little bit deeper on this as well? Like,
Yes, of course.
how do you make someone feel special? Obviously, a very surface level question. That is not up to my standards, but like let me draft in my brain. So, like, what do you think is an offer characterized by that makes a premium buyer feel special? Yeah, we talked about price tag, we talked about exclusivity, but what else do you think is in the mix of this?
Yeah, good question. So it's the experience, it's how you build it around it. Like you know, a world, the difference between a feed and a world as well to start with is when she enters your page, she wants to claim an identity. That's the difference. You're not selling a product, you're not selling a mastermind, you're selling a vision and an identity. And that makes it a deeper layer because a premium clients doesn't want just a product. We want to become the highest potential. So if you see her, and that is the real thing. I mean, did everyone say to you, I see your potential, you can go bigger? No. Why? Because we were always the one that holding the shit and lifting other people up. But if you find this coach that sees your potential, I mean, I have a client that said, you know what, I want to. Or I said to her, why aren't you going to rent a private jet and learn women how to fly in business and then jump out of the plane together? And why not? So that's the beauty. Premium clients don't want someone to tone her down. That's what we do in our messaging too many times. They want to lift up and finally meet someone that understands her wildest, craziest dreams. And if you build that around your product, about your mastermind in the smallest details. So, like I do the envelopes right now, for example, if someone signs up for my the Forbidden Table, what I do, I write a handwritten note. I created these cards that I'm obsessed with and thinking about the fonts and even that the letter, the fonts and how it looks. And I write them a note because I don't want them to send a welcome email. So like Chanel does with the champagne, I do it with the smallest details.
I love
And
that.
that is how you make premium buyers move. They feel special.
Beautiful. For everyone listening, what is the Forbidden Table? Like a little ad break.
Hey, I can promote it. No, yeah, the Forbidden Tables I'm working on right now. It goes live in September where I focus for the visionary woman, the tastemakers. To move from an internet business to movement, where we dive into premium positioning. I'm obsessed with that messaging, high level sales, and movement, of course. And it's a small group, also the thing. It's only for eight people. Because, yes, some women want You know, I don't believe in masterminds with more than, I don't know if you have a mastermind?
Yeah, I mean, small always. I'm not
Yeah,
a.
exactly. Yeah, that's exactly it. We are not building here for 100, 200, or 500 people. No, give me a small exclusive ones that have a shared vision. And that is also why this is important. Many people speak to pain. So I spoke to a client this morning and she was in my DMs and she said, I am rich and burned out because my calendar is full of people with pain. Yes, because you are speaking to people in pain. So the beauty is if you speak to the identity, the vision of who she becomes, what happens? You collect not a community, but a world where you have a shared vision. Yeah, and that is how you rule the world.
Period. So we talked a lot about the intricacies of brands and world building now, but summed up in a few sentences again, what is ultimately or what ultimately turns a brand into a place people want to emotionally enter?
Yeah, good question. So this is really funny. It's a devil.
It's a devil?
It's the devil.
Ooh.
Let me explain. So if you look at all the cultures, if you look in politics, people are standing for something and against something. So what happens? You have to choose. So in my business, I have the devil. It's the ones who want to go viral. An internet business, the hustle, the trending audios is a devil. So I'm against that. So I'm standing for exclusivity, intimacy, small groups, movement. So what happens is I'm building a world now where we are all standing for the same thing, not only the shared vision, but it's also the shared devil. So you have the same enemy. I mean, how many times? You become friends with someone because you have a shared enemy. Yeah. That is what you do when you build a movement. You have an enemy and you have the hero. And you play with the devil then. And then people want to belong to that. If I go hard in with my content on like yesterday, I posted yesterday the post about my world, my worlds. After that, I see people buying from me. Because they want to be a part of that, what I'm saying. Like, I'm against this. And yes, I also want this. So that is what we are brain is we are built to for safety. We have a choice. Are you this woman or this woman? And you want to choose. And that is also how you make people move. The post that I create about some women build a business, some build a personal brand, some build a world people would kill to belong to, they have three choices. I make sure they choose the last one because you want to choose.
I love that. And what I also find very interesting is have like the shared vision and identity, but also have the shared devil, obviously. And from a brand DNA perspective, beyond and below the visuals, we have, you and me, we have so many similarities, what we stand for, what we stand against. Yet at the same time, our brands come out totally different. And I mean, I'm in a reinvention process or have been myself. So we're nearing finally nailing the visual landscape again. But ultimately, like, what would you say is like, not the reason for it, but just like your thoughts on this, like how like can we be so similar yet come out so differently at the same time? Because I feel like so many people are chasing this differentiation factor that needs to be, they think it needs to be so fancy and it needs to be the only one in the world, and they can't say or state or claim anything someone else in the world has already claimed. And I'm always like, well, good luck, because that's going to be a never-ending chase, because every single day new people are born and come into the industry. And it's like you, yeah, like this is, I love fancy, but also it can be very limiting, and can slow you down a lot. And so what would you say to those people thinking they need something extraordinarily different instead of working with something they have that might be similar to someone else, but also recognizing, hey, it can still come out completely different than what that person is doing.
Yeah, because what makes you different is you. So what makes you different, This is always why I start with the zone of genius, the ingredients. Because my life experience is not yours, right? We have similar backgrounds. We have similar geniuses. So we can be in the same industry and even have the same devil and the same vision. But the zone of genius is different. I mean, how I see it, you, I mean, I see the untamed one, by the way, the rebel. When I see your feet, that is how I feel immediately. But also, you have also this purple, right? A little bit, and that's recognizable. But that also is like the wise one, the spiritual one, purple. So that's the communication of the feet. And that's not me. I mean, I am obsessed with white, with black. I hate colors. So, you know, but that's a good thing. That is how you build a brand on your own taste. And that is what you also ask, yeah. Like, what is taste? A woman with taste. It's not like someone looks better. No, it's a woman who dares to stand for what she believes in.
Yeah.
And does it her way. So many people would say you're making a brand too aesthetic. It's too not human. But I mean, I like that. If you look at even my room, it's white, it's black, it's beige, no colors. So, and you know, but your interior is different, by the way, than your feet, what I'm seeing now.
I know, but this is also more of a, this game is a furnished apartment, so I didn't furnish it myself. When I would like, you should see all the interior boards that I saved on Pinterest and into Instagram,
yep.
All the patterns and all the everything, like Leo here, ferns over there, glitzer here. And I love that, as you said, like you're more like you're very minimalistic in your
yes.
aesthetics.
Always been. Yeah.
And I'm the hardcore maximalist. I'm like, give me jewels, give me glitter, give me the chandeliers, the
yeah.
bigger, the better. Give me the everything that just like sparkles and
yeah.
glitters. And I'm just like, I'm a happy girly, because for me it's like, it's a decoration of the goddess, of a woman,
yeah.
to like just be dazzle and bejewel yourself and like be full of gold and all these things. And I'm
I
just
like
like
that.
Celebrate being a fucking woman, like
yeah.
give it to
I
me.
Really love it, and that's so important, because that is how you are, and that's your visuals should reflect that. It should. That is also why the archetype is so important, because
yeah.
what you do is, if the queen archetype, if you look at that, I mean, I don't want the tiger print and, you know, the colors and I'm obsessed with some other women who do it. And that's the beauty as well. I can learn from a woman like you, because you are, you know, online, like the rebel, you're dancing, and I really love it. I'm not doing that, because, and that's the beauty. People will love you for your aesthetic and your archetype, or they don't. Or they are the opposite and they want to learn it. So that's the beauty of this. And I don't care what archetype someone is in. It has to be in line with who they are. So if I look at some clients, they want colors, they want gold, they want tiger print. Would I choose it? No. But it's a perfect match for how they are. So if they are that way, yes. Build that and go big on that, and that's what I absolutely love, and that is why everything you can have a still, like we said, the same vision and the same devil, but how this is the taste, these are the ingredients, this is your secret sauce, and you have to go big on that, on how you want to build your world, and that's the beauty of this. There are no rules, you make the rules. And also, when it comes to the archetype, offline, I'm not the queen, not always. I mean, I wear no makeup, I wear no heels, you know, but I choose to be the queen because I want to. And this is fun. It's like creating your own Sims, you know. It's not fake. It's not pretending like you're someone you're not. But what happens is I started to move differently when I stepped into the queen energy. I started
yeah.
to show up differently. Because I can create my own character. I can create my own. You decide what people whisper about you. That's up to you. Yeah.
Yes. And it's so good that you bring up the Sims example. Because like when I started 6 years ago, that was literally what I told my clients from the get. I was like, imagine you are building a Sims character. Like, what would you dress it as? What would you equip it with? Which like preferences and character traits and bad stuff do you give it? Like, that is like, think of it as the simulation. So it's crazy that you just brought it.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, beautiful. I love that. Now I lost my train of thought because I got excited for a second.
Well, and important is also, it's not like it is a mask that helps us, our nervous system, also to build a world, to build a character. I mean, that is what people love, right? But at the same time, yes, show your humanity. It's not about, and this is what many people are don't understand. They think there is no humanity. That's not it. I mean, still you can show up in a with your bunny hat, and go live. It's not like you have to be this queen all the time. That's not what this is about. But this the more the bigger story, yeah, it's linked to that queen.
And I also really like the consistency piece behind it. And I think this is where a lot of people do have a not a struggle, a challenge, both struggle and a challenge, whatever, especially when they build personal brands. Because you've
Yes.
heard it for sure from your clients as well. Oh, but I want to be authentic. And so when I go through this next week, I want to say, I feel you. Like, I have so much to say on what authenticity truly is. But, anyways.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, oh, but what if I'm not feeling like the queen? Yeah, this is exactly what your archetype is for, to keep your brand in a direction. And you gotta make it not about yourself, like, even if it's a personal brand and you're the source of it, but still don't make it about yourself, make it about the client. And if you change your brand identity or archetype or visuals or whatever, like you're changing your underwear, they pick up subliminally. You can't be trusted because you don't know who the fuck you are yourself. So why would they pay you big money if you're so volatile in who you are and you can't even keep one core identity,
Yeah.
no matter how you're feeling, basically. And then many people get offended. I mean, thank God clients I've left behind, or an audience I've left behind, because like, that's I don't have any capacity or energy to argue about this. You either get it or you don't, and if you don't, you're not for me,
Exactly.
period. But yeah, I really like the consistency and through line in your brand as well. And also love the aesthetics, even though these are not my brand aesthetics, right? But for me, it's like, oh, maybe I should like be a bit more clean sometimes as well. Like, I see it as inspiration.
Yeah.
And so it really, like, I really wanted to highlight that. Also, you saying that you went through this transition in the past year and it was difficult, but like, despite all the difficulties, you stayed the course and you stayed the line because you knew your vision, you knew where you was going, you knew what you wanted,
Yeah.
and you probably maybe had the urge, or you didn't, to sometimes disrupt it or whatever. But I think it's so important to like discipline ourselves to stay the fucking course.
Yeah.
And it's also something I'm picking up way more again, because again, like, I was in a 2-year metamorphosis of who the fuck am I, identity crisis,
Crazy.
this or that or this or that. And as you said, like, when we have too many options, it's not even nice. People think it's
No.
freedom, but sometimes it's the most unfreeing thing to be in this decision overwhelm. And so yeah, when you work with clients and they have a certain issue with that consistency or disrupting their through line regularly, what do you say?
Yeah, hold your fucking standards. This all the time. And I see you do because we are cock blocking ourselves all the time. I do it too. I'm aware of that. On the front door, maybe people don't see it, but on the back, of course I have the same voices. I understand them. For me, it was also a journey, and now I'm like, yes, this is it. So it takes some time. But what we do is we start to see how other people are doing it, and that is when we are going to be distracted. I don't, of course, I'm on Instagram. Maybe I'm on Instagram 30 minutes a day. I post, I ghost. Is
Wow.
there, it's against the rules. But I am not on Instagram. That's the funny thing, because how they are doing it is incredible, but it's not my way, and I don't want to be distracted from how I am doing it. And I did it too many times. I saw a coach that I was really inspired about. What happened? I started to sound like her. That is what happened. So I always say to my clients that You remind yourself who you are. And I think that's also the thing that people are not aware how special they are, and that that is enough. That what they can do, that their zone of genius, the simplicity of that, that that is enough to stand out. And you have to stick with that, with one message.
Yeah, I love that. Ah, so much juice. Let me think, is there anything left we can dive into as a final piece? I think I would like to close this with a tiny bit of a practical spice or whatever. So when we hear all of that, the identity is important, the shared vision, but also the shared devil, the
Yes.
standards as a filter, the taste as a filter, the aesthetics, owning that, the unrelatability piece as well, and really owning that edge instead of being scared that we're scaring off other people or whatever, because that exactly is how it should be. And so I think most people like get the identity piece, but ultimately, to close this off, how does someone really know, or how can they truly pinpoint whether they're just creating content or really creating a world right now?
So if you would die tomorrow and you stop posting, will you still move people? That's the difference between building content and building a world. The world does the work for you. It still moves people. I mean, look at Michael Jackson. He's still moving people with his songs, and he's not here anymore. So if you stop, will your Instagram stop, or can it still move people? And if it can, you're building a movement. If it can't, you're building content. And that's, yeah, that's the difference.
Karen.
You're
Supran, thank you so, so much for your
welcome.
wisdom, your juice, and taking your time to be on the Premium Way podcast. It was a delight to talk to you.
Delicious. To keep in my movement language.
Yeah, in your language, it was delicious.
Yeah.
Chef's kiss to end this
Yes.
with. Yeah,
Yes.
I love that. What do you have upcoming? Where can people find you? Where is the best place to start in your world?
Yeah, of course, on Instagram. What's my name? Sifra Saija. I think I don't even know
I will link
my
everything in the show notes. Don't worry.
Yeah, and of course, I'm building the new program where this is exactly what I'm doing, the iconic movement. So everything we talked about today, it's more of an experience, that program. So it's going to be my one program, my legacy program, and that's it. Because you don't want 100 programs. You just need simplicity. So one program that I give it my all, and that's what I'm building right now. It goes live June 22. Yes.
And days.
Yes, in 10 days it goes live. So yeah, I can't wait. So that's what I'm working on right now.
Love that. Okay, so all the links will be found in the show notes, for sure. Again, thank you so, so much. And
Thank you for having me here.
my pleasure. Everyone else, you're gonna hear me in the next episode.